Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. This is season two, episode 13. We're back again with another GDPR radio session where we're talking all about the news in data protection this week. It was a really interesting session, and I'm obviously overjoyed to be joined once again by Katarina Santos for another GDPR radio. How are we doing, Kate?
I love the Katarina Santos. I'm all right, Ken. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. We had
it was such a nice session, wasn't it?
Like, yeah, it was a great session.
Supposedly to be on the GDPR news, but then we ended just to touch a little bit on the new EU age verification app. But then was a definitely like a dedicated session on AI, kind of a preparation for next week's episode, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly what it felt like, actually. It felt like a warm-up to what's going to be the episode next week, which is all focused around AI. But, you know, it's really hard not to talk about AI at the moment. And fortunately, everybody in the chat was, you know, really riled up and ready to give us their thoughts and opinions and stuff on some of the news pieces we were mentioning about AI. But, you know, really good session for me. I think one of my favorites of the year so far.
I really liked it. And it's always amazing when we have people joining actually in the conversation live. So definitely please have a listen to our episode. It was really good. We spoke about the Copilot and some risks that actually one of our members of the audience were like facing with usage of the AI and SaaS and requests. We spoke a little bit as well about governance and what should the organizations do to make sure the AI is actually part of the conversation and part of the framework. And we try to give as best of our knowledge some tips and recommendations, but definitely next week's podcast and episode will definitely touch a little bit deeper on this one.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we think it's a really good one. So we'll wait for you to jump in and enjoy. Good afternoon, everybody. Again, happy Friday and welcome to the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. I know we just had a few mentions that we've got some new folk in here. So before we start these sessions, we just do a little bit of housekeeping before we get into the brunt of the session. So a few things first and foremostly is that these sessions are recorded. One of my lovely folks on the other end of the screen will be sharing our privacy notice, just letting you know that we are recording these podcasts. So if you want to exercise any rights, please feel free to contact us. Also, in relation to AI chatbots, if we do see them, we will be removing them from the session as per consensus from the community, effectively not really liking them in the session. We want this to be a free-flowing session where people are open to speak in their minds and letting us know your thoughts on data protection. And then this session is really here for you guys in the main. You know, me and Kate may be the you know, sort of leading in the discussions, but we want these to be a place where you guys as a community can come together and discuss elements that may be giving you trouble or maybe stuff that you just want us to have a little chat about, like, you know, Kate's interesting birthday traditions in Portugal. But that's, I think that's all of the, I think that's all of the housekeeping. It's a GDPR radio session today. So a little different from our normal kind of routine, where we just look at the news of the week and we have a little bit of a chat to it, as opposed to some of our more structured sessions around elements of the law. But okay, I think that's it. How are we doing? How's your week been?
Yeah, it's been all right. So as you all came aware, I'm back home, which is always good. In terms of work, actually, I have always liked to make use of when I'm far away from the office to actually do the work that I was trying to delay for like the last couple of weeks. So it's been a very bureaucratic, more management kind of things putting together. I'm doing actually a very interesting project with a new client of ours relating to SaaS. So I think, I'm not sure why, maybe just obviously a coincidence, but since our last episode on weaponized SaaS, I actually came across so many SaaS coming from my clients. So actually, I'm dealing majority of my work actually now, client facings is relating to SaaS, and one of them being project-wise. So very interesting actually one where basically grievance, disciplinary, etc. And it was an ex-employee loads of third parties were involved, one for the reductions, another one for gathering information from the IT provider. And then is the HR person that is actually managing this SAR. And so a lot of challenges because a lot of people involved in here, delays. So it's kind of being a little problematic in that sense. And but one thing that I came across actually interesting enough was that the data subject requested for so much information on more like obviously HR kind of related to the intention being to build a case, well, kind of against like the employer. Anyway, there were a couple of bits that were requested, one of them being witness statements based on decision making to make the grievance and like any actions. And we came across a potential clash between legislations. So one of them being obviously GDPR, where personal data, reductions of third parties' data unless consented, et cetera, et cetera. And the other one being employment law. So apparently there is a legislation. I need to, obviously, it's not our kind of focus is employment law. But it was mentioned, and allegedly employment law, if there will be a tribunal court, I said, like a court thinks you need to disclose that information to the requester in terms of every single document, including witness statements, because it's part of their right to build a case and to go to court.
Is that in the realm of pre-action, quite interesting.
Yeah.
The pre-action protocols? Yeah. Because obviously that would be... We're going to treat that differently to the SAR, isn't it? And I think that's what that is similar to the disrepair stuff that we kept seeing. Is that a lot of the soliciting sort of exchange of information is part of the pre-action protocols before you go to court. So there's a bunch of steps that you have to take in sort of UK sort of legal stuff before you go to court with like exchange of information, looking at like stuff like arbitration and like what do they call them? Alternative dispute. Resolution, ADR. It's been a while ago since I remember any of this stuff. But effectively, they would probably look at it in the realms of if we're looking at it for court, then we'd have to get a court order for the information. If there's no court order, then we're not going to give it, basically.
No, absolutely. It was just very interesting because actually it was the same person dealing with both requests.
Okay.
So she was in the matter of what's got to do. I am sure like what we do, and obviously we're like providing advice and everything is resolved now, but it was actually a very interesting conversation because I knew about the existence of this kind of the pre-actions, etc., but I never literally came across as an example like how to react when actually clashing of bits of it was very nice. And what I was saying more, and that was it actually. That was actually my week. What about you?
It's been quite a nice week, all things considered. Obviously very busy, but spending a lot of time sort of looking at some of the cases and QAing those with the team, which is great. Been spending some time working with Miles as well, and a couple of our lovely folks in relation to something I was meaning to bring up. So it's a nice little. Sort of tangent, I suppose, is that for any of our sort of existing customers, current existing customers from today onwards and which they may already have received, will be receiving sort of additional customer sort of incentives that we've launched recently. So something that me and obviously Mars has been working quite closely on is in the creation of giving you guys and all you lovely folks who obviously spend time working with us and we spend time working with you and getting to build rapport is giving you as much additional stuff as we can to help trickle down that sort of culture for data protection. So if you are a customer, hopefully by now you will have received the email from Miles. You might not have checked it yet. But it has all sorts of great stuff on our end. We've got some brief sort of informative short videos that we've put together. Some information in relation to some of our new services that we're launching, as well as for the very keen eye, maybe a nice little offer or discount here and there. But we do know as every month alongside obviously the external newsletter, which will be going out obviously to some of you folks that aren't customers but are also obviously on the podcast. It's really cool incentive. We're really glad that we're doing it. So hopefully for some of the folks that have received that, you'll keep enjoying them because we'll keep pushing them out every month as well. So yeah, just a little note on that.
It's worth it as well, just because you are talking about the marketing stuff. That we finally recorded this as event and made available.
Yes.
So we have done that finally. And it's available on YouTube now for our housing customers.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody that was at the Stairs event, I know obviously was talking about the recording. We finally found a good time to get me and Kate in a room that isn't the podcast and sort of hash it out. So that should be available now if you've seen that on our social media. It's also on our YouTube as well. So if you're wanting to have a little listen about what when we were discussing the Stairs, it won't be obviously as high level as the actual event, but hopefully a really good view of that for you. So if you are interested in the Stairs, an opportunity to have a little look at that. But on that note, Kate, should we jump into the news?
Yes, do it. I mean, so many things happened. I feel that in terms of GDPR news, because we had like the topic session and then we have the guest speaker, we did not speak about news for like a long time, I feel. So I was just reviewing like the news is like so much
a lot's happened. Yeah. The last session was with ran the last session with Holly, didn't we? With the last news one. So I seen when you shared the stuff, I was like, oh, there's the stuff from last week. I thought, oh, Kate would have probably loved. I was saying it last time. I was like, Kate would probably love some of this stuff, especially the stuff with like the political elements and stuff and the Reddit and stuff. I thought, oh, you'd love to talk about that. But
I know.
You're too busy. What can I say? You're too busy. But
I will try today to speak a little bit about that because one of the things actually I've seen it and I'm not sure if you had a chance to check, but I thought it was very interesting, particularly like kind of related to actually with my very favorite topic, the children's data protection and privacy, etc. That finally because of the dilemma, because age verification and the Digital Service Act and obviously the Online Safety Act, the EU launches an age verification app. So this was like something that happened during this week. So finally, in the stuff that she does, at least some of them are good. So Ursula von der Leyen has announced a new EU age verification app. It was built on the European Digital Identity Wallet framework. So a couple of like things that are very nice with this app is the fact that users now can prove their age using passports, national IDs. They say, and allegedly is to design to protect privacy preserving, will be anonymous, will be untractable, and will allow platforms to verify age without accessing the full identity. So the idea behind it is the users themselves download the app, they will upload the documentation within the app, and then the platforms using the app will just say like, yes, it's all good to go, we have verified that their age is absolutely fine, or actually no. And there are a couple of countries, actually, France, Spain, and Italy, Ireland, will be ready to integrate it by next month, May. Mm-hmm. So I'm really keen to understand, actually, how this will work. And understand, actually, if the UK will have something similar, because this will apply in the EU perspective under the Digital Services Act. Mm-hmm. But obviously, we have the Online Safety Act. And I'm really understand like conclusions, feedback, and how this works. But to be honest, I feel that we still have attention here. And actually, when they say that we'll be anonymous, we'll be untractable, is it our rights? It was 100% clear that this will actually happen. So I think this will always be the questions. But I feel that it's a good step like towards to children's data protection and understanding finally that children's need an extra safeguard and data protection, and is good to see a good steps on this area.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, I suppose an element of the actual security side and the principal side of the Online Safety Act was kind of neglected, I suppose, when everyone was kind of rushing to get these verification measures in place, as was seen in people sort of over collecting data and some of the cases that we've seen in the law. So I think it only makes sense that we're going to see more tools like this that hopefully can present, you know, strong security measures. I know there's always going to be question around how anonymous something is, and there's especially that question now more than ever is kind of floating around the space, around, you know, is can data truly be anonymous from that perspective? So I'd be intrigued to see how it's deployed in the EU, how well it does, if there's any sort of scrutiny that is brought about because of it. I think the UK are probably currently looking to adopt something very similar. I imagine they're going to be watching the space, and they're going to see how it evolves in the EU before they kind of jump into it. But once they, I think once it's proven that it's working fairly well, then it will probably just be the case where it's the UK looking to adopt something very similar.
Hopefully.
Sweet.
I can see.
Yeah, I was going to say it's just a quick one before we were to go into the Aaron. I know you mentioned dropping the question in last time. Was looking to hopefully cover all the questions that everyone was leaving us off the back of the SAR podcast in the next SAR session that we was going to do. If there's anything more urgent, then I'm really glad that people are jumping in and helping you in relation to the CCTV request that you received. I suppose a high-level response from me, CCTV is considered when the scope of a SAR, because it's considered as processing, effectively. Anything within the realms of how you process personal data will be caught in a SAR, no matter what means that is. If it's not as traditional as an email, you know, it will still exist as you're still processing it. You know, if you reasonably hold that, then it must be part of a SAR, effectively. Obviously, there are going to be things that change around that. Obviously, retention is probably quite limited in relation to CCTV and what you hold. And you may have already deleted it, depending on what your retention practices are. But in terms of the actual request itself, it's about obviously making sure what is reasonable. So not searching for things for really long, drawn-out periods of time, you know, not searching through 12, 13 hours of footage if you can help it, you know, trying to work with the data subject to understand what they want, see if you've still got that footage, and then how you can actually work in redacting that where necessary to provide that to the data subject. Kate, are there any thoughts you want to shine on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think align with your saying, when we receive a SAR or SAR request and asking for all information, etc., it's definitely not reasonable to consider CCTVs as part of the kind of the disclosable kind of information. I always like to the approach of trying to obviously clarify and understand the scope of the request, and if they actually require definitely like the CCTV footage, and you include like within the list. If that happens, definitely try to understand and clarify that the fact that you only use this for certain events and certain areas. Just make a point that should be as well made a point, because we should not have CCTVs that are not working all the time. So that can mislead the people to believe that they are, well, being recorded and in the safeguarding purposes, etc. So think that can be seen as on the other side of the coin. But back to SARS, try to understand the time frame, try to understand dates, times, etc. Because again, it will not be reasonable for you to watch all the recordings and looking for the same data subject. Mm-hmm. So absolutely fine to clarify that. And again, reductions and blur. And if you feel that that you don't have the tools to do that, try to think about that, because definitely is needed. Obviously, we are all always welcoming if you need some further assistance on that. But yeah, reductions, everything that applies to a normal kind of request on SARS is applicable as well to CCTVs.
Yeah, I think we mentioned on it here, but we do offer CCTV reduction now. So we've probably referenced it quite recently. So if it is something that you're concerned about, then you know, feel free to reach out to us, either directly to me, okay, or maybe our info, our email. I can get someone to follow up with you. But thank you very much for the people in chatting, in jumping in and helping them out. I really appreciate that. And we'll absolutely be covering more of your questions in the next SAR podcast that we do, the follow-on from obviously the from the last
I
one.
I do.
Sweet.
And what have you seen in the news?
I've seen a few bits and pieces, a few interesting pieces. I've got something that slightly pushes like a thought and feeling of mine, so I want to talk about it probably more from that perspective. And it was a study that was raised recently, and that in America, that demonstrated that staff without proper guidance and training on how to use AI has been shown that has slowed the actual productivity of the business and of their work specifically. And you know, I mean, I have a few thoughts on this as someone who's always been relatively cautious about the use of AI and someone who is, you know, very, as especially particularly standoffish from the perspective of what we do as consultants, you know, in terms of advising on the law. But I feel kind of two ways about it. I can really see how AI can elevate a business, definitely when used appropriately. I think issues with business at the moment is there's a real lack of control over how their staff are using AI at the moment. From what I've understood, I think a lot of businesses are really struggling to rein in the application of AI in a realm in which they deem acceptable, or even actually trying to find out what is acceptable to them. I think a lot of people probably don't even know that the sort of answer to that question, because, you know, that's not an easy thing in deeming what is right for you and what's fit for the business and what isn't. But I do feel like there is a sort of lack of, you know, overarching sort of authority on this is what we do. Don't sort of step and you know, sort of flirt around the outskirts of it. And I think that's probably why we're seeing a lot of sort of lack of productivity, because you know, what they were calling it in this article, work slop or something, which I probably resonate with a little bit. I think I've probably seen stuff out there on, like, you know, certain sort of articles or certain posts occasionally that I just think, like, you know, this is very obvious that it's a bit sloppy, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, well, you definitely know my thoughts about AI in general. I'm not the biggest fan. I now came to peace that we know that we need to use it. So I'm not came to peace that we will use it as a tool. But I'm always a very believer that they are here to help you, not to replace you, and should not ever replace your knowledge, should not ever replace you as your work, because, well, you are doing, like, you shouldn't always make yourself productive. But I think there's a couple of things that, obviously, with experience with clients that using AI as part of their business, being not only just a product actually as they are selling, but as well part of the way they work, is there is a couple of things actually. Lack of training. There is definitely lack of guidance on how to use these tools. And there is at the same time pressure to use these tools without understanding how we do with this, in what is the line. And then you come across when employees using them in the informal way. So the risk of, well, it's just like asking a question, and then you come to a point that they are copying and paste emails and putting in ChatGPT, for example, please provide it with an answer, copy an answer, and back to them. So I'm actually not surprised with that.
No, but I don't think I'm surprised.
No, I'm not surprised either. But, and then we can never forget that, obviously, all these AI, particularly the free tools, the information that, and the responses that generate to you is based on information, well, available online. But then if the algorithm or the way they work is, well, not 100% accurate, or actually the information available online is itself not accurate, they will provide with an answer regardless. So I think we came across so many information with clients and stuff, didn't we? In terms of actually the information you are providing to the external world is wrong and is visible. You are relying on something that you think is correct just because it uses this amazing wording and looks super professional.
Sounds flashy,
but actually the content is incorrect, is actually articles. I do remember a case that I think we spoke like a couple of episodes ago. Articles not even exist, or actually the content is not about article, I don't know, 15, but it's actually about article 17. So it's incorrect. So
I do wonder where it gets some of the inaccurate information from. I had arguments about it, about, like, it's like quoting of the law, and like the like it was referencing an exemption, and the exemption exists. It was saying, oh, it's this and I like, it was something that I'd received, someone sent it to me, and I re-put it in into, I think I used Copilot, they may not use Copilot, they may use something else. And I said, where did you find this in the law? I said, where does it say this in the law? And it just reiterated what it said back to me. And I was like, well, I don't think, no, it's not right. It's like, it says it here instead, actually. Because what you're saying is right, but you've referenced the wrong law somehow, and I don't really know how we've got there. But, it's difficult with open-based source you know, I think there's a real worth and benefit in the training, because it's actually beneficial to understand how these models learn. And I feel like that kind of opened your eyes to the potential risks in using it as well, and maybe actually kind of shifts the way you try to apply certain elements if you understand how it's learning.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I think the training, aside from obviously the theory part, because it's always important to have the context about how things work for you to understand, well, it's not just doing. You should always understand as well background and context how things actually work. But it's as well the effort of the employers, or actually the managers of the head of departments, to make sure that that training is a practical thing made available to the employee. So if you go to your acceptable use policy, or actually it's not even in the policy, but you do know for a fact that these tools are being used by your employees or part of your team, you, in my eyes, you do have the obligation not only to obviously make them available in the policy, because you are just closing your eyes to something that actually is happening in the business. And obviously there are the risks inherent to that. But as well, you have the obligation to let them know how do they work, because they will use the tool. If they have any questions, they will use it. So I think you should definitely make them information about, okay, how do you use ChatGPT? How can I just copy and paste, like just an email from a client, and just copy and paste and ask for a response? Do I need to kind of redact the names and take off definitely identifiable information? Can I copy and paste confidential information from the business? Yes or no? It's really important to guide them in a practical way, pragmatic way, and let them know the do's and don'ts. Understanding as well what you are not acceptable as a business, because in the end of the day, if something happens, and one, if you do have a policy, you kind of have like a protection as a business to say, well, you are in a breach of our internal policy, so you need to obviously be penalized or have a disciplinary action if something wrong happens. But if it is not the case, who actually will be responsible? Should be the organization, because
you
obviously
ownership.
you have the employees.
So it's within the business.
Absolutely.
And it's hard because no one wants to take ownership, because, you know, it's hard to understand these things, and a lot of time with how things are moving, there's not a lot to understand really at the moment in terms of what the law is giving you. But on your point, Janine, and seeing your point, I feel like we might have spoke about that. Might be wrong. I think we briefly touched on it. Janine mentioned that apparently Copilot was having a functionality to like remove redactions, which is absolutely terrifying, isn't it?
Horrific, yeah. They, on the course I was on, there was people from the NHS, and then they'd had files created by the solicitors. So the solicitor sent it to them. And then on the course, we all decided we were going to test. And so many of them came back the next week and they were able to read behind it. And I had no idea that was even possible.
It's really worrying. I think we've received similar I guess concerns. I don't think anyone's directly come to me and said, we know that someone has sort of utilized this function to see the redactions, but I know a couple of customers have come to me with concerns in terms of like, you know, how do we attempt to control this? And that's really putting practitioners in a massive box, really, isn't it? And they're putting a little bit of fear in terms of what they want to disclose. They're going to be second guessing a lot of redactions now, and hopefully it's something that is actively being investigated. I'd probably be keen to see if the ICO is aware of it. They must be in some regard, but I would be keen to understand if they are, because it's definitely a massive concern, and there's a massive infringement of the rights if that's the case.
Oh, this is the NHS.
Oh, I see.
So the NHS were solicitors working on their behalf. That document was about to go out. So if the person wasn't on that course, that document would not have been checked. The solicitors were entirely up in arms. They were horrified. I've tested mine. I think Adobe Pro has been tested, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But I think everyone needs to test their own.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you very much for bringing that to everybody's attention, Janine. I really appreciate that.
I think you are raising actually a quite interesting point, in a sense of how important it is to actually do like a risk assessment, your own due diligence on these platforms. And Copilot, in my mind, for example, comes allocated with, well, definitely Microsoft, definitely one of the biggest and reputable organizations in the world, in particular on the technology side. And I think there is automatically a thought of, they are the good reviews. Everyone works with Microsoft. Everyone has Copilot. So therefore, in principle, everything will be fine. It was implemented within our organizations and is being used. So I'm sure that we'll be fine. And then we came across by using these apps and tools, etc. Actually, it's not that really fine. And this is something that should be definitely included in the risk assessment and due diligence beforehand. But sometimes we just don't know because you do do your own research and you read your terms and conditions and do your own due diligence. And then you just didn't come across with this. And is it expected for you to do unless they come back to you and actually say this? It's really concerning, I would say, definitely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a real difficult one. And, I suppose urges people to maybe look inwards into some of the tools that they're utilizing. I think it's probably easy to like easily move on to a tool, and because they work in compliance, I suppose.
I found that I feel maybe I'm being paranoid, but I feel it becomes biased towards. It's like feeling it's become biased towards us, Titarian as well, because all ever people ever use it for is to complain. So it always puts a negative spin on things.
Mm.
But also our tenants are feeding SARS into ChatGPT now and then asking it to point out where we may have breached regulations. But it's also very inaccurate. So there are accurate that we'd already spotted as part of our SAR review. We'd spotted where we'd gone wrong and they had been highlighted. But then it brought up things because it brings things from templates, so it kind of tells your tenant, oh, they've called you high risk, but no, there's just a template in there with what's high risk, what's medium risk, what's low risk. But then of course, because there are some true things in there, they believe all the inaccuracies as well. So I find that every SAR that goes out is quite a battle now.
Yeah, I wonder if they realize that they're feeding the model as well in doing that.
I don't think so.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe part of the problem. To be honest with you, Janine, it's concerning, to say the least. You know, the implication on all ends. And I think you're right. I mean, I think based on the information that's probably being given to the AI, it will be spinning a narrative based on the information that's been fed. It'll be using, you know, all sorts. It'll get anything it can find online on posts, on reviews, on what's been actively fed and learned from, especially things like ChatGPT, which is obviously open source. Mm. And then if you're basically placing the whole SAR and you can actually see the whole SAR, then you know, you've really got to think about the implications of that, especially as the inputter of this information.
Mm.
There's probably some seriously sensitive data relating to them on there. Yeah, I wouldn't feel comfortable with that being used to train an AI model.
I did. We have one customer who always feeds it into ChatGPT that we know of. But the last request came, they wanted it in machine readable format. I did reject the requests and they did appeal, and I stood by my rejection and I didn't provide it. But I did have the benefit that was their seventh SAR, albeit over a long number of years. However, I felt that I could prove that they just wanted to put it into ChatGPT and not actually know what we're sharing about them. And really, they didn't go to the ICO, so I don't know what would have happened if they had.
Yeah, you can't really stop people as well. As well, I suppose that leads on to your question, Becca, is maybe people need to, maybe we've got to the point now where people need to start integrating these kind of statements into sending out SARs. Like, you know, we're heavily discouraged doing that. You know, not only is it, and you know, I understand why someone who would make a SAR would want to try and get rid of redactions, because I kind of understand why they may feel like they're in a position to make a SAR, but I don't think they understand what the implication of that is, the fact that they're infringing not just the rights themselves, but the rights of others, the fact that their data is now sort of effectively out in the ether, but they can control their data. If they want to put their data in there, fine, right? That isn't a problem. What becomes a problem is when third-party data, company data, and data that is nothing to do with them starts to remain in their control. It's highly, highly problematic. Maybe something that we should drop a personal line to the ICO about, maybe, if they're not looking into it already. But it's definitely is concerning. And I don't blame you for feeling a little bit paranoid, really, Janine. To be honest with you,
I think it's so fair, because it's just like people. I think they just are not aware. They just don't have awareness and the knowledge. They just think, I think because they don't see the consequences, life is something that they are just putting information, and then actually have a positive response. They just thought, great.
ChatGPT had told this customer that the data protection officer of Titarian was treated them so poorly. They did not, they totally lost trust in me. And it took a human being to tell the individual, Janine has instigated the whole of your complaint process, has highlighted all of where you've been treated incorrectly. But because ChatGPT was telling me your data protection officer is not upholding your rights and not doing this, then thankfully it took our director to actually advise the thing. But I just don't know how much of a scale this is impacting everyone.
I imagine it is. As I say, Jenny, I don't think it's the first time I heard this. And no, I suppose
on the last, unfortunately.
No, I know.
I don't think so.
On a note, but,
Shah made a point in the chat. Have you included this in your risk register, and in terms of like actions and what is discussed?
Me,
In terms of I research and within the
Definitely a risk we want to start pushing to the broader business if you can.
You know, all the risks that always need to. There are a couple of risks that always I think about, that all the business have as a risk because they are inherent to the data. I think definitely usage of AI, and as soon as you have Microsoft, for example, Copilot including within the SaaS, it should be something always to consider. And Kane, you mentioned probably considering putting a statement. I think that's a very good point. Just make
only so try far to you get, can
like,
control
liability
it.
From way.
Yeah,
informing people goes a long way. And some people won't, it's hard to make some kind of people listen to the importance of data and information governance. But, as Kate mentioned, liability is a really important thing. And making sure it's clear that, you don't endorse these kind of activities, and you think, in fact, that you don't endorse them from a personal perspective, not just from a business to do that, is probably a really prudent idea. So I think it was Becca that mentioned that in the comments. So thank you for raising that. I suppose anybody that is feeling like they're having, similar issues, again, I think it's exactly right to get that up on the risk register, start presenting it to the board, just because, I apologize if this feels a bit fairy almost, and we definitely don't want to make it that. But AI governance is a real thing that we have to consider. It's it's fortunately quite topical, because next week we're actually talking about AI as our sort of focal point, which I know that this is kind of what the radio session has kind of become. And unfortunately, you just can't escape it in the news. Everything in the news is about AI now, unfortunately.
Yeah. But nobody is talking about AI governance. Nobody. CHC, nobody. I'm all board and EMT, and all of our boards and EMT are hearing what it can do for you. They are not being told that they need to change their whole business model to adopt AI. Your T&I teams need to become your quality checkers, your bias checkers. You need to update your procurement process to ensure that algorithm bias and liability is written into contracts. None of this has been spoken about to them. So it's falling on your a DPO who might get some training to highlight this. So if the DPP can help me on my crusade.
No, I mean,
with educating everyone.
We're right with you, Janine. We do our best to try and help
educate everyone,
educate businesses, and you know, as many people as will listen about the importance of proper AI governance. It can be difficult, but
I have urged the CHC to please focus on governance, give some consideration to governance around AI, and provide guidance to those board and EMT members who are putting their signature here, and they have no idea these risks even exist.
I think the AI problem massively is as well the unknown world, isn't it? There are so many questions around it, no answers whatsoever. Guidance is very poor, very broad, very non-specific whatsoever, not even sector-specific. And then now there are roles now being AI governance and AI in terms of like data protection of AI, and it's really a nightmare. It can be very tricky, because the algorithms and the feeding information constantly, the fact that you as an individual as well as an employee are feeding constantly this, the AI already are included within the platforms by default that you use as a mechanism, and your employee should actually definitely have that obligation, and even the regulators should be able to provide with that information. And it's just like sometimes it's a little frustrating, because as well there are EU is moving forwards even on the legislation point of view to actually let's regulate AI. We have the EU AI Act. The UK had the conversations that okay, probably we will consider that to adopt kind of the same. Nothing happened after that. We do have the 10 principles, but they are not even binding. They are principles. They are considered not even binding. So it's very, obviously the GDPR applies, but in what extent actually? What is the extent of application? So
it's got to go further.
It's really tricky. Yeah.
It's not just about personal data. Obviously, personal data is important. At all. But it's not just about personal data. In fact, it's probably...
It's information now.
Yeah, it's probably very limited speaking. In scope, you know. And if you're probably right.
Definitely,
the matrix probably is coming.
The matrix is here.
Have you actually tried to speak to an AI bot to sort something out? Yeah, do we want our customers going round in these circles that we have to go around ourselves? I can't possibly imagine doing that to my customers. It's just like I wanted to have a hotel room next to my son over Christmas, and I was wanting to phone Premier in. But do you think I could speak to anyone? It was just this AI voice, and it's just if that comes into housing, then you know it can be really really. Ruin someone's life sometimes, couldn't they? If they can't get hold of someone.
Yeah, it's strange. I'm seeing AI tools used for everything at the moment. In fact, I suppose before we cut off, I'll bring one sort of important thing that I wanted to raise, which will tie into next week's discussions again, which is I think perfect timing since everybody kind of loves to hate AI and loves to talk about it
all together.
Exactly, but it. I was brought to the attention of an AI software called Claude the other day. Now, there is quite a new AI technology. I think it uses something called Mythos Preview. And apparently it's been investigated recently, and it's been found that it's progressing so fast that it's able and capable of attacking small and weakly defended enterprise systems, the AI system itself. Accesses obtained. I think this was in a testing position, but they're saying that organizations need to basically be rigorously testing their cybersecurity hygiene practices. So making sure they're pen testing and running any kind of checks, because apparently it's able to just identify any kind of weaknesses and vulnerabilities, which is, you know, a real scary thing.
There's different type of attacks that can be made via AI, depending on the type of AI. And therefore, if you bring that in with your data and you don't have the right TNI skills to undertake the correct type of pen testing, because there's different types, then it's just going to be an afterthought again, isn't it, once something happens, I think.
It's really concerning, because... I do remember back in the days when cyber attacks require expertise. We were all thinking about all genius, ingenious guys that did the cyber attacks. And now you have AI platforms that actually definitely they are less skilled actors. They just feeding. They are faster They don't even need people, probably. They have one individual looking for that and they are able to do that for you. And I think I think platforms like this, the biggest organization, the big ones, the big players here, they're all protected, definitely. But we are talking about local authorities, small organizations, like definitely under-resourced, like sectors, even like probably even health being definitely one of the big ones on this. This will be very problematic, I think. When you came share this with me, I thought, wow, this is literally what we came through. It's just like, we just not even need people anymore.
Well, it's already replacing coders in a big way, apparently, is Claude. And it is showing that it's actually incredibly hyper-intelligent, being able to make apps so you can effectively go and download into like the app store sort of off the cuff with a bit of tinkering. To be able to identify vulnerabilities in someone's system is, you know, truly really concerning.
But at the same time, is very impressive, isn't it? I would say how efficient that could be on the other side of the coin, like, efficient, like, you do probably have any questions about your own platform. Let's see actually how vulnerable we are, aside from the vulnerabilities and pen tests, etc. Let's see how vulnerable we are. Let's run a test and see. And actually, that's efficient enough to identify those vulnerabilities.
Well, it would be great if bad actors didn't exist, wouldn't it? And I mean, unfortunately, I'm too much of a reader of sci-fi to be anything but slightly sort of worried about AI, to be honest with you. I remember I read a story as a kid that absolutely terrified me about AI before it was really a thing in my mind. I remember reading it, put the fear of God knows what into me. So
become real.
I'm trying to remember the name of it. I don't think I can remember. But it's like a horror book, but it's about AI. It's actually really good. It was a really good book, but it's made me very, very quite cautious. But I think, you know, it's kind of tailing off in kind of the conversation we was having is, I think it's really keen at the moment that we are making this something that is known in the organization and something that's being considered. You know, there's not a lot out there currently to actually work from. There's not a lot of guidance. The law in the UK is non-existent, realistically. And I think it's going to be a while before we see anything. And you know, these platforms and this intelligence isn't slowing down. So the UK has to speed up, realistically, and catch up, because it's you know, losing the race in a big way. But I think our job as practitioners is making it clear and pushing to face to that this is important and governance is important. Especially in the realm of AI, and making sure that someone has some clear ownership. It doesn't have to be you guys as DPO, but that someone is willing to put their hand up and to shoulder the burden of AI governance as of current in the business.
Yeah, and definitely the lack of the legislation and even like potentially guidance shouldn't be an excuse. Obviously, that will make your resources very, very smaller. But you do have trying to understand exactly what we can do. There are even specific job roles for that. Data protection practitioners, unfortunately, they were designed to be on the GDPR side of things. Definitely AI now changes the switch, but we are ready to go and move forward. And we should do our own research. And I know that employees sometimes themselves don't have the resources to do themselves the training and implementing this governance side, but should be part when we're talking about IGFs and templates and accountability, etc. AI is one of the topics alongside with the principles, etc., should be as well treated as part of your exercises of accountability and demonstrate how your approach to GDPR and to facing these challenges. So it's really, really important to bear that in mind.
No, absolutely. I'm mindful of time. I don't want to keep you guys too long, as I'm sure you've probably
all got... Where have you been the time?
I know. Oh, God. Absolutely flowing. I'm sure you've all got very busy Fridays on the cusp, but maybe not. Maybe you can keep your feet up and relax a little bit. But we really appreciate you all joining us again for another Friday. And thank you very much for everybody getting involved in the chat. And also thank you very much to Janine for getting involved and China. It was lovely to get your perspective. But we hope to all see you next week, where we'll be talking about AI again. So fancy that. I don't think there's anything else that I need to bring up. So we hope you all have a lovely weekend, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you very much. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.